My Creator, I am now willing that you should have all of me, good and bad. I pray that you now remove from me every single defect of character which stands in my way, in way of my usefulness to you and my fellows. Grant me strength as I go out from here and do your bidding. Amen. See, that's the seven-step prayer, and once we do get to that point, we're supposed to have understood a few things. We're supposed to have understood that every time we quit drinking, for some reason, with all our good promises, all our good energy, everything we had inside of us, every time we quit drinking and gave up the thing that we loved the most, there was a weird mental twist that said that our answer is what we had to have again. And we drink again. And to me, that's the definition of powerlessness. And that's the definition of the fact that you're an alcoholic. Because if you can't stay away from the first drink, you're an alcoholic. People who have choice over the first drink, they might be heavy drinkers. So, and then you get into step two, because now that I have this problem that I can't quit drinking, and now I realize that because of the drunken behavior, I've kind of blocked myself from God, and my life's been pretty crazy, you see. And maybe in step three, if we can make an attempt to say, you know, maybe the way I've run my life isn't very good, that maybe God could run it a little better, maybe. And I think I might want to try that. You know, when you get to step four and you say, well, geez, in step four, I got to take a look at what I'm angry about, right? But what it really turns out is you're taking a look at what you're really fearful about. And then you got to look at your part in that fear. Because that fourth column of the fourth step is so critical, and we're going to talk more about it tonight. But I believe the fourth column is where so many people go wrong in Alcoholics Anonymous, and they don't find the value in what we have, unfortunately. Because in Alcoholics Anonymous, we have something that I believe is of value, and we have to teach new people that what we have is of value, and it's important. Because I can bet you I could talk to my children today, and they'd say what I do in Alcoholics Anonymous is of value, even in their lives, you see. And that makes sense to me. You know, and then once we get to that fourth column and get that written and figure out our part in things, we go and take a fifth step and talk about all this stuff. But most of all, in the fifth step, I believe we need to come out of it with an understanding of who we want to be as we move forward. Where we had fallen short in those patterns as we looked at them in the fourth step. The 12 and 12 says we ought to come out of this area in time with a set of chosen ideals. And so as we have this set of chosen ideals, and then once we have this character that we think about, then we can know what character defects are and shortcomings. Because if you don't have character, how do you know what a character defect is? You see? And guys like me didn't have character when we got here. Okay? You know, they told me to stick around a while to get some character before I'd have some defects. Because that was one defect. You see, all the time. And so, we look at step, you know, six and seven, and what we're trying to do in these steps is we're trying to have pride busting and ego deflating. We're trying to break our self-will down to the point where we can let God in. So that we can get the pain out of our soul that's so strong that we just have to keep everything away from us. And we have to drink to just get a moment of rest. You see? And so if we're really trying to do this as we move and allow God to start removing our character defects, and we turn our lives over to Him more and more as we go through the steps, and we're supposed to get closer to God. The eighth step's all about getting closer to God. You see, and so as I started to look at the eighth step, it pretty much scared me. And I got to tell you, whether it's the fourth column of the fourth step or the eighth step, they're the 2 points most people quit in AA. And I've seen a lot of people stay sober for a long time and stop at those points, and they got drunk after many, many years. Many years. Because they didn't take a fifth step. They didn't do a ninth step. They didn't go through the necessary process to create the miracle of God's grace in our life that will last long term. You see? And to me, I need this process to put me through so that I can find God's grace and that I can live to be happy, joyous, and free. That's what the Big Book promises me. It promises me the fourth dimension of existence. Now that sounds pretty wild to me. But you see, there was a whole different existence in the world than what I was living. And that's the good news we have for the new people, is that there's a different way to live. There's a whole different set of existence from the way I lived when I was drinking with my drunken behavior. Okay? So I start to look at the A step, and I don't know how to do it. So my sponsor says, well, you go back to the fourth column of the fourth step and you start figuring out what part you played in it and what did you harm? And is there anything in there you need to feel bad about that's not in the character that you want to develop today? That's pretty broad. You see? Because what happens is, in the eighth step, we have to write down the things that affect our soul. Because those are the things that are going to block us from being sober. And that changes as your sobriety goes on, unfortunately. Because as we get closer and closer to God, the way we feel about our soul and the way we're in touch with our soul changes. Because these steps, as we work this, you see, I look at it this way. My sponsor called me a concrete-coated marshmallow when I got sober. Okay? I couldn't feel my soul very much. Because the way I was living, I had to desensitize myself so much to accept the life I was living. Because it kept getting worse and worse and worse and more violent and more violent. And more drugs and more alcohol. And it was bad. And so by the time I got here, I had to relearn how to feel. And what feelings were and what qualities were. And I had to learn all of these things in sobriety. Because I didn't understand them. I didn't understand that my life was full of fear. I'm a tough guy. I carried a gun every day. I hurt people. I blah, blah, blah. But I'm full of fear. You see, the tougher the outsides, the more fear on the inside. It's always true. It's always true. And so, as we get into the eighth step, when we start looking at that fourth column, we start seeing, well, geez, I did this, and I did this, and I did this, and I did it over and over again. And I start to see my part in things, and I start to say, that's not the kind of guy I want to be today. Well, if that's not the kind of guy I want to be today, then maybe I might have hurt somebody else with my behavior. Maybe I need to talk with them about it and make it right so that I don't have these daggers in my soul that hurt. You see? And the eighth step is about identifying those times in your life that really hurt your soul. Those things that you have done that you feel terrible about. You see, and it's real important to understand that you feel bad about those things. I did a lot of things that at the time I did them, I didn't feel too bad about them. But as I look back years later, I said, geez, I guess I was a little bit off on that one. Maybe I could have done a little better there. And those are the things that you know, I hear so often in meetings. People are very, very afraid of the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous in AA. And I say that because it's very obvious if you watch. Because as soon as somebody gets to the eighth and ninth step, they want to make a couple amends. You know, they'll make that mother and father, brother, sister, husband type amend type thing, uncle, aunt. But to really make amends? To really go back and look at the list of people you'd harmed and go to them immediately, not waiting now. The book says we need to vigorously do this. It doesn't say we get around to making amends when we're ready. It says we go out and do them. It doesn't say when we run across somebody, we say, geez, remember I... No, it doesn't count then. You got to go out and do these things. You can't sit here and say, yeah, I've got somebody on my eighth step and I'm not going to do a ninth unless I run into them. Where's that in the book? But you hear it all the time at meetings. Most of my amends were 1,500 miles away from here. What, am I going to wait till I run into somebody? Till it's convenient? And the steps weren't that way for me. I had to go and do things. I had to be an active part in my recovery. I had to find, how can I get closer to God and keep the power of grace in my life so that I could stay sober another day? Because that's what it's about, is one day of sobriety at a time. How can I be sober another day? And so at first, I had the first four step. I just had to take the rough stuff, the stuff that really was in here. And believe me, there were some that I had to go to my sponsor and talk about and say, you know, is this something that I got to risk taking an amends for? Now, before I ever worked the step of Alcoholics Anonymous, I had to work the steps before the steps. And in there, I committed to something, and we hear it every meeting we go to and how it works. And in there, I committed. I took an oath that I would go to any length for Alcoholics Anonymous. You see? Look, man. When I started drinking, I didn't experiment with alcohol. It was full-scale research from day one. Okay? But yet I get to Alcoholics Anonymous and I'm going to be putting my little toe in there and saying, I don't know. I don't know. I know it's so bad out there in the bars and I don't want that anymore, but I don't want what these guys have. And see, that's a powerful thing, because who except for somebody who knows they're dying, this is what the book says, is going to do what course of action we're set out to do here? Who's going to make this list of the things that really bother them, the people they've hurt that bother them in their soul, and then go to those people and say, how do I make this right? What do I have to do to make this right to you? You don't go and say you're sorry. That's not what the book says. The book says we need to go to somebody and say, how do I set this right? How do I make amends to you and make us whole again? The problem is we got to do it then. You see? And that scares the hell out of most people. It immobilizes most people and they won't do it. And either they end up sober, miserable, and angry, or they end up sober, miserable, angry, and drunk at some point, or they commit suicide at some point. You see, because if you don't clear out your worst things in a eighth and ninth step, if you don't make these amends, they will eat at you inside. You see, to me, the worst thing you could ever do to me as a man is take away my drugs and alcohol. Because sober sucks to me without Alcoholics Anonymous. You see, the one thing I believed in, and my sponsor made me read chapter 11 very early, because in chapter 11 it says that in Alcoholics Anonymous that they have a solution to the boredom. And that solution is the fellowship. You see, they had some things that I wanted here in Alcoholics Anonymous. And these old guys told me, you don't have to do an 8th and 9th step. Go ahead, be miserable. Go ahead. Please, make it easy on yourself. Make it easy on yourself. And believe me, I wasn't the guy that came out and said, oh, I'm going to write this all down. I'm going to do it right the first time, and I'm not going to hold anything back that I'm going to take to the grave, right? Sure. Sure. But I can tell you that as those things ate at me, because I knew I didn't do the step properly, or completely, they blocked me from God. They slowed my progress. They caused me to act in ways I didn't want to act. They didn't allow me to learn the lessons I needed to learn. You see, and I didn't get the pride busting and the ego deflating that I needed at the time. You see, I've seen all kinds of men's in this program, whether it's just the men's that are nice, and a hug and a kiss, and they're all fine. I've seen people go to jail for making amends. They were willing to go to any length, and it's just that simple. So if you're willing to go to any length, that's a pretty tall ladder for us, guys. But you know what? I think I went to any length when I was drinking. I think that somehow, every time that weird mental twist came into my mind, I went way out of my way to drink. I was very inconvenienced every time I got high. Very inconvenienced. But yet, we're not going to drive 100 miles to make an amends to somebody that we really hurt. And we don't know what that hurt that we did to them is doing to their life today. You see, in Alcoholics Anonymous, we're supposed to be God's messengers. We're supposed to be here in a mission for God. And when we hurt all these people when we're drinking, they're sober when we hurt them. We don't remember most of it. We didn't feel it because we had to drink to take it away. Some of these people we hurt, they may be damaged for the rest of their lives. And if we don't go to them and change the course of that, their life might be destroyed. And what right do we have to do that? We don't. You see, it's very important that we go back and clean up the past. It's very important that we look at these things and understand the stuff that blocks us from this happiness in our soul, from this ability to sit in a quiet place and not feel totally disturbed in our heart. That's what I want. That's peace and serenity. And I can tell you, when I do my meditations now, I can tell every time I'm upset about something. Every time I'm disturbed about something, or something comes back from the past and just jumps up like a frog or something. I mean, it's crazy. And I'll be like, holy cow, there's another thing I got to deal with. But you know, either I deal with it or it bothers me. And if it bothers me, I'm losing time in the present. I don't want the past to hold me back anymore. Not anymore. I don't have that many more days left on this world. You know? I got sober a lot of days ago. 13,762 days. It's a long time. You know, I was 27 years old when I finally got this, after 8 years of coming in and out because I wasn't willing to work the steps. I wasn't willing to do what it takes to stay here. You see, if you think you come to Alcoholics Anonymous and you're done sacrificing with everybody around you, you're wrong. You're wrong. Because when we come here, it's our responsibility as a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous. The Big Book tells us it's our responsibility to teach the next guy what we just did. You see? Or else it doesn't matter. And that the only thing that will ensure your sobriety is intense work with another alcoholic. Imagine that. Now, if you're afraid to do an eighth and a ninth step, how good are you going to be with a new guy? And if you're not good with a new guy, what the hell are we doing here in AA? Because the book says the only reason we join AA is to help the next guy. I don't care if you're a week sober or a month sober. If you don't have a sponsor, and I know getting a sponsor is an awful tough thing for most people. But if you ain't got a sponsor and you're not reading the book and you're not working the steps, I don't care if you're a month sober, you ought to be working steps. If you're not doing that, how can you help that new guy who walks through the door with his eyes this big, sweaty palms, and he smells because he hasn't had a bath in a month? How are you going to help that guy? Too many people in the meeting turn their back and walk away. Why do we come here? What do you think? I was nice when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous? I wasn't nice. I wasn't polite. You people taught me everything I am today. Everything I've ever had in my life, I've been taught by the people of Alcoholics Anonymous and by doing the things that I'm supposed to do. The freedom that I got from the ninth step was the most amazing, miraculous thing that ever happened to me. Because I no longer had to worry about looking over my shoulder anymore, worried about being embarrassed who I ran into this grocery store, or wherever I went, I didn't have to worry about hurting anybody or being in the presence and embarrassing them because I had hurt them in the past. That's a pretty good feeling. And I didn't know that for a lot of years. And just to walk through and be cool and be free. That's amazing to me. But see, this is where the pain and the fear of doing an eighth and ninth step are so important in Alcoholics Anonymous. It's important that we realize that pain and that fear this is causing us. Because the fear is going to immobilize us and it's going to stop us. It's going to block us from God. And the only way the miracle can happen here is for us to push through those fears so that we can get to faith and so that we can start to trust God. And that's when the miracle happens. You see, the miracle happens that moment when we just get this release from this God-awful feeling that we're not good enough to be in the world because of the things we did in the past. That unclean feeling that we feel in our soul. And all of a sudden it was gone from me. Now, it didn't mean it stayed away, because I still got character defects, and I got shortcomings, and I make mistakes all the time. I'm human, and guess what? Sometimes, today, you know, most times I use the 10, 11, and 12, but every year or so I have to take a full inventory and do 12 steps again. And the greatest thing about kind of the way I look at things is I do 12 steps on every little problem I have every day. Because the first thing, it doesn't matter what way, it's a guy driving slow in front of me coming up here today, and I got like 5 minutes variance to make it here, you know, and I got an hour drive, okay? But I'm powerless over the guy driving slow in front of me. Because he's driving slow, it's making me unmanageable. You see? Kind of insane a little bit, because it doesn't matter. I got here on time, right? So maybe in the second step, maybe God could restore me to sanity and teach me how to drive, right? And maybe in the third step, I'll say a prayer and say, you know, God, okay, I'll let you do this, right? And in the fourth step, I got to look at myself and say, why didn't I leave earlier? Where's the procrastination? Where's all of my part in the fourth step? And then I got to talk to somebody about it and look at the sixth and seventh of why I was that way. And maybe I got to make amends sometime. I mean, fortunately, I didn't do anything that I'm embarrassed about there, but this could have happened. And, you know, so often we get down on our knees, right, at night, and we say, you know, God, thank you for this day of sobriety and this wonderful thing and all the people you put me in my life. But you know, I want you to scourge with fire that guy who cut me off today in traffic, right? Jeez. Yeah, we set ourselves up so that we have issues where we owe other people's, not an apology, but an amends, which is way different than an apology. Amends means we don't do it again, unfortunately. And for somebody like me, that doesn't happen as quickly as I would like it to. It's pretty curious how long God takes to work with me, because I kind of feel like, I don't know if you guys are Indians fans or not, but I'm a big Indians fan. And like last night when Naylor hit the walk-off, and they hit another walk-off today, you know, and one in the 10th inning, you know. But last night after Naylor hit that walk-off, he runs up to Charlie Manuel. I always do that. My kids laugh about it. He ran up to Tito, and Tito had a batting helmet on, and Naylor headbutted him on the helmet, you know. And so they were joking today about Tito, if Naylor hit the walk-off, because he was up just before Giménez hit the walk-off. And they were saying, man, Tito's going to run, you know. But, God, the Indians, I'm off on a tangent. But the biggest message I've got about the eighth and ninth step is that you have to do it. You know, you got to tell your brain to shut up, because your brain's going to tell you you don't want to do it. Your brain's going to tell you that it's too fearful, it's too scary, that everybody's going to kill you every time you make an amends, and it's going to be a death warrant on you. Been there. I've seen it in 100 people's eyes, and they run away from AA. They quit going to meetings rather than do it 9-7. All the time. It's just a shame. Because they haven't believed in the value of the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. We have value here. We have something that's very, very special. Very special. When I look at what it did for me and my family, I can tell you, I came here as a homeless, non-educated, never worked in my life, crackhead drunk who liked to drink wild turkey every day and do coke all night long. And that's who I was. The only thing I'd ever done for work was drug dealing. You know, and to sit here and think that I work these 12 steps, I go to a few meetings, I listen to a sponsor who I don't like, and I do some of this stuff, right? And to think, in Alcoholics Anonymous, I met a woman and married her, and we were married 20 years before she passed away, and she died sober, and I got two young boys that are wonderful young men. They're both upstanding citizens. Neither one of them are qualifying for these rooms. And it's just nothing but a miracle of God that for the last 14 years I raised those boys. And they're good. They're good. They're actually nice boys. They have manners and they're polite. And they got everything from their mother before she passed. You know, they got nothing from me, I'll tell you. But I taught them to be rough and tough a little bit, and I taught them that, you know, there isn't any participation trophies in this world. And in AA, there ain't no participation trophies. You don't get a trophy for showing up. Look, I don't get a toaster oven when a guy I sponsor gets a year, okay? You see? What happens is that when we come here, all the coupons we get in our lives and our family gets in their lives are way beyond anything of that fear of doing the eighth and ninth step. It's way beyond that. And you got to look at the value other people have once they've done this, so that you can have the faith and the courage that this is worth, that the fear, that the insecurity, That gut-wrenching fear sometimes that you can't even want, it can't even knock on somebody's door to say, you know, geez, I hurt you, and I know I did. It takes a lot to stay in AA. It takes a lot to stay drunk, though. You see? It's kind of like my heart surgeon. I lost 140 pounds in the last couple of years here, and I remember sitting in his office a couple years ago when he looked at me and said, "You know, Walt, is being fat hard?" I said, "Oh yeah, oh yeah." He said, "Is dieting hard?" I said, "Oh yeah." He said, "Well, pick your heart." You see? And that's kind of what I'm saying here in AA. Pick your heart. Either work the steps or we'll refund your misery. And it doesn't have to be with a drink. You know? There's a lot of people in Alcoholics Anonymous that have been here a few days and they're miserable. And when you see that, you can see that those people generally aren't the guys talking about the big book. They're not the guys working with a new guy after the meeting for an hour sitting on the side. There's things we have to do in Alcoholics Anonymous. Important things. And the eighth and ninth step to me is some of the most important stuff. All right, I guess I've talked long enough. So let's have questions. Hey, see, I'm a slow learner and a quick forgetter, but you know what? 3 weeks in a row now we got questions. No participation trophies for me, man.
Thanks, Walt. So now we have some time for questions and answers. Anybody here in the room, if you have a... hit the wrong button. Talk about being a slow learner. Hold on a second here. What did I do? Let me just do this. Okay. All right. Hold on 1 second. There we go. I think we're good now. I'm not going to touch it anymore. So if you're here in the room and you have a question for Walt, go ahead and raise your hands and I'll get you the microphone. And if you're there on Zoom and you have a question, go ahead and speak up whenever you have the opportunity and hopefully we'll be able to hear you. So who would like to start us off?
On Zoom. Not a question so much, but I have a message from your sister who lost 10 years on. And she wanted to get a message to you. She said that it was the first time she'd been to this meeting. It was a privilege to be here. She's proud that you're her brother-in-law. She's been in AA a long time, of course. And she said from the moment you opened your mouth, she was captivated. Unfortunately, she had to leave early for a work thing. But she said that she wanted you to get this message that... to tell you how much she loves you and how powerfully your message affected her. And that's it.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
And who else would like to ask a question of Walt? Okay.
Hi, I'm Patrick. I'm an alcoholic.
Patrick.
Thanks, Walt, for your message tonight. My question has to do with, and I'll admit, your interpretation of the ninth step is a little bit different from my understanding, and that's what this meeting's about, I guess. But how would you handle the situation? So, you know, your idea is we go to any lengths and actually take some steps to make an amends. You know, I think you suggested asking the person what can I do to make an amends. So, in a situation like that, if the person that you're trying to make an amends to and you're willing to go to every length is like, no, I'm not interested in this. Whatever it was, I hardly remember. Forget it. Sorry, I'm not interested in what you have to say.
Well, that's an easy one. You did your part.
Okay.
It bothered you, it didn't bother them. So you showed up and did your part. That's all that matters. You see, I believe that we do the footwork and God handles the results. The results are none of my business today. That if I show up and work these steps and I show up and do God's work and I show up and do the things I need to do, that the results, they don't matter because all they're going to do is make me upset. because my expectations will always be higher than what results are. It's proven, whether it's in business, whether it's here, whether it's anywhere.
So if someone rejects your attempt to make an amends, you've done what you can.
Absolutely. You've done everything you can.
Okay. No, that clarifies it for me.
It makes it just real simple because you show up, you say, what can I do to make it? He says, nothing. Okay. Nothing. I said that, I'll pray for him, and then I'll move on. That's an easy one.
Who else has a question?
Hi, Jim, alcoholic.
Hi, Jim.
So I don't have any amends, I don't believe, that I know of, that could possibly end me up behind bars. But, I mean, I don't even know, I'm not even sure how to word it, but it just got me thinking about, you know, what kind of an amends could someone possibly have to make that they're aware that it could end them up in prison. Say, let's say it was a robbery.
Mm-hmm.
Broke into some place, whatever, a house, whatever the case may mm-hmm. be, and you stole cash. And there's, you know, the statute of limitations hasn't run out yet or anything like that. And so you know that it's possible this guy, this person, this whatever, could, you know, really be holding a grudge, really mad, mm-hmm. nothing's going to sad, nothing would make him happier mm-hmm. than for you to go behind bars.
Mm-hmm.
I'm thinking in my mind, an anonymous replenishing of whatever was stolen versus rolling the dice to maybe go to jail. I mean,
which do you think would be more powerful as a message to God? Which would be a more powerful testament of your faith and willing to go to any length to get it? You see, I've seen people roll that dice and go to their previous employer and say, look, I stole $5,000 from you when I worked for you. Now, I don't have the money to pay you back. I'm willing to do whatever it takes. You want to put me in prison, go ahead. But I'm willing to pay you back every penny. It'll take me time. I've very, very rarely ever seen anybody go to jail for that.
Yeah, that's that. How free do you want to be, huh?
That's right. You take it and drop it off. How did that bust your pride or deflate your ego? You're taking the easy way out.
Got away with it.
And what did we do when we drank? We got away with it, didn't we? We tried to scam and play the game. You're always going to look to cut corners here. Unfortunately, having the black part of the book is pretty powerful. Because if you live up to the black part of the book, we've never seen anybody get drunk. Now, if you want to risk your sobriety in your life, God bless you. Cut any corner you want.
And the reason for the question was, you know, I may at some point run into someone who has to face that.
Oh, absolutely.
And, you know, and I need everything I can grasp.
I've seen it happen both ways. Almost every single time that somebody avoids a previous employer that they stole from, it doesn't end well because they end up drinking. Okay? Because they feel terrible about it as they move on. It might be 5 years later. If you don't deal with those things, they fester in your soul. You know, I always say it's like in my soul, those little things like that are a dagger, and they're in there and they're stuck. And if I don't get them out, they're going to fester. They're going to cause an infection. They're going to grow. They're going to get bigger. They're going to take over me. Whether I realize it or not, they're going to influence my behaviors. And that's why this is where we find freedom. You see?
Thanks.
This isn't easy stuff we're talking about here. This is tough stuff. You know? Tough stuff.
Who else has a question for Walt? Anybody on Zoom?
I think the battery is either dead or dying, so
anybody has a
Question for Walt. Go ahead and raise your hand and speak louder. Kevin.
Oh, we don't have to what? 2 weeks?
Battery.
Battery's dead.
We have batteries in the back. Thanks, Walt, for coming out. I appreciate it. I'd like to have you, where you came from, your bottom and stuff like that, and then you got to the ninth step. We were talking about the freedom that you got from that. And you know, as a result of that, I think the book talks about you're halfway through, the promises come true and stuff like that. When did that kind of switch in you that turned from that negative self-image that you had to that positive self-image, because you did all the previous 8 steps, you made the 9th step, and I know when you make a 9th step and you get to walk away, and that feeling that you described is you walk away and you don't have to look over your shoulder anymore. You can describe how that transition went for you.
Well, see, it's interesting because I always kind of joke when you're on a scale of 1 to 100 and you get here at minus 20, you get to minus 5 and you think it's like really good. Okay. And I can tell you, I believe that maybe about 3 years ago, I finally have come to a place where I don't have as much fear anymore of sober rules. And because I can tell you, I mean, everything I did was so new to me. Whether it was marrying my wife and having children or buying houses or 42 years old, quitting my six-figure job and starting a company with $300 and a laser printer. You see, they were all based on fear. And fear drove me to create that company into something phenomenal. But it was all based on fear. So could I sit back and say I was really comfortable? No. No, I wasn't. I was afraid that I wasn't good enough for a very, very long time. And it's driven me in Alcoholics Anonymous, and it's driven me to places that I never would have gone in AA if I didn't have that fear and I didn't understand that fear. You see, like when my first son was born, that was the scariest time of my life. I always joked it's the biggest pay raise I ever got because I like tripled my production. Because now I'm afraid. Okay, and so it took a long time and many layers of starting to become, you know, it's like there when I got sober, I worked at a $4 an hour job making salads for lunch because that's all I was barely capable of without trying to kill everybody in the restaurant. Okay, you know, and to take that guy and to have me run a company with 70 employees and millions of dollars of revenue and all the awards we won, there's nothing short of a miracle of God for that. And I don't take any of the credit for any of those things that happened during that time, because I was just showing up and God was doing the results. You know? My wife used to say something that made so much sense to me, and it makes sense in AA. And she used to say, if it was easy, everybody'd do it. You know? And that's what we're talking about really here. If it were easy, everybody'd do it. You know? And so I think this acceptance comes in time. I mean, like when I graduated from college and my mom was sitting in the front row, a little bit of self-worth came in. You know? When I bought my first house and I was able to bring my parents there, a little bit more self-worth. You know, when we had our children and they graduated from college, a little more self-worth. All of these things build into something that today I'm as happy as I've ever been. You know, I've been through a really bad time the last 10 years. But right now, I'm as happy as I've ever been. I feel as good as I felt 30 years ago, probably. I weigh less than I did in the 90s. I mean, you know, it's amazing the things that Alcoholics Anonymous can do when you start working the steps, no matter how long you're sober. Everything changes at every stage of life, you know. Now I'm getting ready to do this last stage of life, you know. I turn 65 next month, and that's a whole different story. So Alcoholics Anonymous allows us to start seeing ourselves differently. But it doesn't happen in a second for me. It happens as time goes on. As I put all of these things in my life, as AA teaches me, it's safe to be here. You know? Because I come from such a violent world, it wasn't safe.
Any other questions for Walt?
Oh. Hey, so thanks, Walt, for your answer. I guess the other thing, the follow-up to that would be, so it comes up over time, which is a good thing, and it's happened for me. But I guess my follow-up question is related to fear. So do you take your fear that you recognize that it's fear? Do you recognize that it's fear, number one? And then if you recognize it and you channel that fear into a positive direction, is that how you approach things?
I think the best thing my sponsor ever taught me was to not be afraid of my fear and to use my fear to my advantage. And I'll be forever grateful for that, because I'm able to take fear and say, I am good enough to do that, even though I don't think I am. You see? I never would have started a company to compete against these major people. I won an account of Time Warner Cable nationwide to do their advertising. That's not me. You see, that's God. That's just me showing up and doing the steps and going to a few extra meetings and helping drunks and sponsoring and doing things I don't want to do. And all of a sudden, my life got a lot better. My life got a lot better. And then the people around me's life got better. It's amazing. So amazing. I marvel at AA to this day.
All right, I think that does it, Walt. Thank you again. And as we look forward to next week, I believe you will be speaking on steps 10 and 11 together. So, just 10? Just 10.
If it's 10 and 11, that's fine.
All right, so it'll be 10 and 11. So if you're on Zoom, tune in next week for steps 10 and 11, and certainly you're invited back here if you want to have some food with us. So, do we have any pizza next week? Yeah.